Welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups, the reality TV podcast without Rob. My name is Dan Heaton, and we are here to talk about The Amazing Race Canada, Season 3, Episode 3. And Jess is, unfortunately for her, traveling to Iceland, though I'm guessing she's having a great time. But I am not here solo. You will not just have to listen to me. I have brought in an amazing guest. You almost certainly are familiar with him through he's appeared on Survivor podcasts, An Amazing Race. He does Last Comic Standing. So many things here at RHAP. He is also our own King of Tango. He is the great Mike Bloom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dan, for having me. I feel like if I'm able to embody the dance of love, I feel like anyone can master it. So really, calling myself the King of Tango is a very short-lived term, if anything.
Well, there were some teams this week that I think you probably could do better than, but they had some tricky situations, I'll say. So before we get into this, so much happened this week. Since this is your first time this season, I would like to, so what are you thinking about this season? Are you enjoying it, or, you know, how does it compare for you?
All right, so I'm gonna say this, but I'm also gonna typify it by saying, like, in general, these Canadian reality shows are at the moment infinitely better than their American counterparts, and whether that's just a show of age on the American counterparts or production difficulties or production deciding certain things should happen to make things more spicy and bring in more ratings is besides the point. I would say so far this is probably my least favorite of the three Amazing Race Canada iterations, but I still enjoy this better than a lot of the modern Amazing Race seasons, season 25 being the exception.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's definitely a step up from seasons 24, especially, and 26 of the US version. But I'm curious a little bit, because I haven't really come down myself on how I compare this to the other two seasons, because we're only so shortly in. But is there anything in particular with season three that's kind of making you think it's not as strong as the others?
Well, there are a couple things in there. Leg design is definitely one. We're going to talk about this, I'm sure. I feel like the first few legs have kind of not been the best designed. We're going to see here in this leg that there are some, I wouldn't call them repeat tasks, but they're very repeat in designs of tasks from previous legs. I always love Amazing Race Canada always does fantastic route infos. This one, for example, being the blindfold soccer challenge that I'm sure we'll talk a lot about. But I don't know. Sometimes it just feels like, you know, repeating certain types of tasks to create more drama, especially within two episodes of each other. I'm specifically referring to the detour here, does not necessarily make for good leg design. I think the cast is pretty good. I do feel like this time at the past two seasons, we knew at least a little bit about each team and they were all entertaining in their own aspects. I would personally say that there are probably about one or two teams right now that I either know nothing about or am kind of meh on in terms of entertainment. That being said, there's still some fantastic TV going on here, don't get me wrong, but seasons one and two are just like the pinnacle of Amazing Race right now that it's hard to live up to with three.
Yeah, and I do see your point a little bit about how the tasks were designed this week, especially with the detours. And yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, if we're nitpicking at all with anything, it's so minor because it's the bar. I feel like especially, I mean, I think one was amazing. Two had extra teams, so it's a little hard to compare. I think two might have been even better. So I'm hoping this one will get right there. And I really enjoyed this episode. I think I enjoyed episode two even more. And there's certain reasons why I didn't enjoy this as much. Because the headlines, my winner picks have been defeated.
So I'm sure we're going to eulogize them a lot over the course of this podcast, but I want to talk about them in general as characters, because I was totally there with you, Dan. I'm a big supporter of female teams, and I was like, cool, they're cops. They seem hardcore. They seem focused in it to win it. Let's do this. And they totally became the bumbling cops. They totally became like Andre and Damon from season three of the US version. I can't think of them having like a really lucid moment in their three legs on the race. Can you?
Now, and I was thinking about that more. I watched the episode again tonight, and I was thinking of watching them more in particular. And I think they're too manic. Like, you noticed it even with the soccer, where the one is just screaming, go, go. And they're running so fast. They're like, even when they went to the detour and they said, well, there might be too many teams. Oh, whatever. Let's go. I think, I don't know if I call them, they are not the most stellar racers we've ever had. And I do love the Andre and Damon reference, though. That's season three of the U.S. Amazing Race, maybe one of my favorite seasons of all time. But with them, I think it's just they wouldn't slow down. I feel like they move too fast. Well, we saw it last week when they ran up the mountain. And even if you're this physically strong team, if you don't take a second, like you see some of these teams tonight that don't move as fast, like Neil and Kristen, but were smart and took their time and were deliberate, and they did very well. And some of the other teams, kind of Nick and Sabrina also, where they're so manic that it ends up hurting them because they just can't control their nerves.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting that Dana and Amanda have the exact opposite problem of Andre and Damon, and that Andre and Damon literally fell asleep on a train and missed their stop, whereas Dana and Amanda are running. And I mean, look at I don't know which one's Dana or Amanda, so I'm just gonna assume that if one person is isolated, that it's Dana. Dana in the roadblock, just running into the crowd, yelling English, English, English.
That was Dana, yes.
So like, I don't know if Dana is the more loose cannon cop, considering that she's also the one that like insisted that that random poor lady who had this bag kiosk, she thought that she was lying to them and hiding the Mentos. Like, this poor woman got dragged into this. I'm sure the production was like, we're going to be filming on the street, and she was probably hesitant to begin with, but then to have these Canadians come in and start rifling through her packaging and all of her product is probably not the best. I can't imagine all the inventory she had to take after that.
Yeah, and that was a great moment. It reminded me of The Amazing Race with the father and daughter painting the wrong house the one season. I mean, yeah. There's so many great examples like this, but I did love how she even referenced in the interview, which I assume came afterwards, but her police skills and how being a cop, she could tell that the woman was lying. And I think it's just the woman didn't speak English and had no idea what was happening, because Dana was just so looking through purses and being so frantic that it was a great moment. But that epitomized how they were. Even the first leg, they came flying out of the gate and then fell behind again. So, I mean, I tend to be very bad at picking winners, because I tend to either veer towards teams that are physically strong, or I try and pick a wild card team and they do terrible. Where here, you didn't really know how they were going to be until they got on the course, and they just, I don't know. I mean, they were so close to not losing, but the fact that they were even in that position, given, you know, that they're a bit faster and stronger, shows just how messy their race was.
Yeah. And I mean, it also goes to show, we're looking at casting here, both female teams got eliminated in the past 2 weeks. So there is a 0% chance, a Spencer Bledsoe-esque chance, that a female team will win this year. So it kind of does suck that, again, I'm a big supporter of the female teams, that after Megan and Natalie got so close, probably the most dominant female team ever in Amazing Race history. But they didn't win last year. Now to have these two teams kind of, unfortunately, kind of sputter out in these past two legs, it's a sad sight to see.
Yeah, and I think when they cast Dana and Amanda, they thought they had a good chance of either being near the end or having a shot. Because, I mean, there are some other strong teams, but it's not like there's seven or eight teams that are in probably as good of shape. There's a few that are older and whatnot. Yeah, but the U.S. Amazing Race had the same problem, where they would cast teams that would seem strong and they would end up driving the wrong way for 3 hours and get eliminated early, or the hay bales challenge. There was like a stretch where they had bad teams that did the same thing as this, where they on the surface looked like winners. So I guess we'll have to wait for next season. I mean, I'm assuming they'll have another season for another chance, but it's too bad on that end too, because my winner picks always fail. But to have this also reflect the end of a chance for there to be, a female team. Luckily, there are a decent amount of you know, there are some couples or father-daughter teams that, you know, that still have a good chance, especially considering how things look this week.
Yeah, that being said, speaking towards the cast in general, because again, I haven't had a chance to come on and talk about this, I really do love just looking at the relationships on this cast. These types of casts always make me so happy. I don't know what really gets me going about parent-child teams, but I just think it's such a fun dynamic, and it makes me sad that we don't see it enough on The Amazing Race. Like, you know, I don't think we've seen it in the past two seasons, not since Dave and Connor won on the American version, which is sad to me. I like when it's a diversity in relationships. It's one of the reasons why I was not too high on The Amazing Race 26 dating edition. But I am happy that, like, you look at these relationships, and let's look at the couples. There's Nick and Sabrina, there's Dujon and Leilani, and that's it, right?
I think so. I'm trying to think. Brian and Cynthia also. Technically, but they're a married couple. They're not the typical younger couple that you would normally see on the
Which
Amazing
is
Race.
Staggering. Let's look at Amazing Race 6, shall we? When like four out of the final five teams, basically, if you don't count Lori and Bolo, were young dating couples. And I feel like once it becomes so monotonous like that, that's when people start to tune out. So as much as people like Simi and Opa, or Ope, and even to a certain extent, Neil and Kristen might not be delivering on the entertainment factor, just the fact that they're there makes me happy.
Right. And I think there's something really interesting when they have father-daughter teams for some reason. Cause I mean, David and Connor, you know, they were a decent team. They were a very strong team, but I didn't get the same feeling that with both of these, especially Simi and Opie. Yeah. They're not the biggest characters or the goofiest team or, you know, great TV in that sense, but I really like them. Like I'm rooting for them to do well. Like they struggled when they got taken to the embassy this week and that whole thing. But the fact that they were able to come in and, you know, do really well at the detour after they switched and did all of that was great. And then I really had very little thought about Neil and Kristen the first two legs, except for him failing the roadblock, where he, you know, five-holing it. And, but I've enjoyed them. I especially enjoyed her this week. I felt, you know, we saw more of them, which was kind of a good hint that they were going to do well this week. But their relationship also seemed really positive. Like their excitement about getting a trip. And then when they found out they got free gas, it looked like they were about to, you know, I don't know, dive in the lake. They were so excited. It was just, that's fun. They were having a great time. And that's the kind of thing you don't see as much. I mean, you'll see with some couples, but not in the same way as people that have known each other for 30 years or something.
Yeah. And I agree about the weird freak out. They're like, I guess they're a really big driving family. Maybe they're a big road trip family. But Kristen in particular became a really interesting character in her own right this episode, because, you know, you guys talked about last week about how you're like, Hamilton and Michaela have this whole weird image that everyone's going to be begging them for the express pass, and that everyone will be bowing down to them. But the only person that's really doing it is Kristen. But Kristen is like, really, really wants it. And I love it just because the fact that she's like, well, my dad's old, so we need it. So like, I mean, imagine, you know, if she had been partnered with Dave, I think Dave would have been playing the martyr card the entire time.
Dave would have gone over and said, I'm an old man, I can barely walk.
I don't know if that would have helped or hurt their case.
I don't think it would have helped, because, yeah, it's interesting. I really think that the idea that teams, we talked about this a bit last week, like you said, the idea that teams are going to just, everyone's going to fall over themselves to get this express pass is probably not true. Because even with Kristen, where I love her, she went up and just said, how much do I have to kiss your butt? She didn't really show her going out of her way to though help them at all the whole leg. So I don't know, maybe they didn't give the right reply. And then we saw how Cynthia acted, which might not have been in her best interest, but with helping him. So what, on that note, I noticed, I mean, this could have just been bad timing, but you had all these teams teaming up at the roadblock where basically you had all these pairs, and then Hamilton was kind of the one left out where he was working on his own. I mean, before the end, where a few teams were straggling in. Do you think, I mean, they're very young and they're pretty quiet. Are the other, I mean, are I don't know. I see all these teams kind of interacting and stuff, but they seem to be kind of more on their own. I mean, the race is a little different where sometimes it doesn't hurt you, but are you getting that vibe at all that they're kind of pulling back from the socializing of the group?
Absolutely. No, totally. And again, we get very brief glimpses into things like airports, and they've done away with the whole eat, sleep, mingle segment. But even, you know, I'm definitely not a good reader of any social psychology principles, but looking at the way they're interacting in the roadblock and everything, I agree with you. It does very much seem to me that Hamilton and Michaela have I don't know if they've isolated themselves or whether it's because of their age or behavior, everyone else has isolated them. But it is very weird that, you know, I don't think it's just awkward timing that Hamilton happened to show up at a point that no other people wanted to work with, that everyone else had worked with each other. You know, I think there is a little inkling there of people saying like, oh, like, I don't want to work with them. And maybe we didn't see at the pit stop in the 12 hours or so in between, maybe Hamilton and Michaela decided to pull like a Tim and Marie and were like, we have the express pass. Who wants it? Who wants to give us things for the express pass? Which, with the exception of Kristen, turns a lot of people off.
Yeah, and I think teams, you even saw that with the way Marie was, where teams just kind of were like, hey, we don't really need this. You know, it was like, I mean, not everyone, obviously, by the way it worked out. And who's to say? I mean, it might be as simple as that he's really quiet, you know, or something. But it wouldn't shock me, because even you would think that, though, I mean, Cynthia seems to be pretty blunt, I guess, is the way that she is. And she was working with Neil, and they're, you know, not similar ages. He's much older, but you know that she's in her 40s and he's 62, but they, you know, seem to have similar kind of mentalities. So it might just be kind of how they're clicking right now with the teams. I mean, they still ended up doing just fine, you know, in terms of, but it could be something to watch for down the road, especially seeing as, I mean, I don't know if we're being set up or we assume they're going to give the express pass to Neil and Kristen, because we didn't really see any other teams going up to them, which doesn't mean it didn't happen. It just, they didn't show us that in the edit.
Yeah. Or it could be, they could pull a move from the Cowboys and just, you know, if they're floundering in a task or they see someone floundering in a task, they're just going to hand it off and go, because I think it's what, end of the fifth leg they're supposed to give it off by. So that time is ticking down. So they might end up holding on to it until the fifth leg and nobody's made an offer to them. So they just give it to the person who seems the weakest.
Right. And I think that might have been because Michaela mentioned, well, we were thinking about giving it to Brian and Cynthia, and they may have thought, oh, well, that's one of the weaker teams. We'll give it to them. You know, and Brian and Cynthia nearly got eliminated this week, so it might not be the wrong choice. So I still am a proponent of just giving it to somebody right away, because I think it's just a distraction. But I can see the enticement for them to think, maybe what if we get lost next week, or what if we can't figure out how to do a roadblock and I'm, you know, putting together a bicycle or whatever, you know, they have to do, and I can get some help. But it's still kind of a long shot to think, especially with the way the Amazing Race Canada seems to design tasks. There aren't as many things, you know. It seems a little harder to assume. This week was actually kind of a rare case where teams could work together very well.
Yeah, and the Express Pass on Amazing Race Canada, I feel like, is a lot more dissolved than the Amazing Race US, because the Amazing Race Canada has, as I talked about before, these route info tasks that are not go to this place and open things up. It's, you know, do these different tasks, which cause someone this week to quit and take a 2-hour penalty. They're that difficult. So I think, giving your express pass away, you have a greater chance of somebody burning it on something like that, as opposed to the US, you know, somebody's going to use it on a detour or a roadblock. But I agree with you. I think just give it away and forget about it, and just say, oh, they, you know, I can understand, you know, you want, there's Amazing Race is a game that's very hard to get leverage in, just because they literally equalize things every single week. So you want to get as much social leverage as you can, and the Express Pass serves that purpose, but it really doesn't work that way.
Right. And you make a good point about the extra tasks, because it's, you know, let's say this week you have the Express Pass and you use it on the soccer, and then you go and you can't dance, or you can't do, I mean, sometimes there's a really hard task at the very front of the leg. I mean, the last two legs have had roadblocks up front that weren't particularly hard, and then it's gotten harder as we've gone. But as we go further, they'll have some legs where there'll be two or three hard tasks in a row. So having an express pass and using it doesn't always guarantee first place anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I sort of disagree with Jess's take on the express pass in that, like, I don't know if I disagree with it as much as I say, like, it was designed to be sort of a get out of jail free card for when you're in trouble, but it's become sort of like a smaller version of a fast forward, in that people, you know, Hamilton and Michaela could have very easily gone to the other detour, but they're like, no, we're just going to guarantee we have first place. And so it's still weird out to me that, and that's the fun thing about reality TV, is that people take these premises and they sort of break the game, almost, that people are now using these express passes, not necessarily to avoid troubling tasks, but to say, oh, I just want to extend my lead further.
Right. And that, to me, I'm not sure that's how they're being used, but I think, like, if I was on the race, I mean, of course, then you have the flip side of the coin, which we saw it in season one of The Amazing Race Canada, and we saw it with John and Jessica on the US version, where if you say, well, I'm only going to use it if I'm really in trouble, or I'm only going to use it, and then you get kind of wrapped up in your own brain and do something stupid and feel dumb when you get eliminated. So there's that. You got to find that middle ground, I think, if you were racing.
Absolutely.
So we did see, now here's my question for you about the route info task. Was this the most epic or fitting five hole we have ever seen, you know, since the term was coined?
Well, since the term was coined, absolutely. I would still say the biggest five hole is the titular one with Megan and Natalie, just because if Nick was like a World Cup winning soccer player, it would probably be on the same level. But since Megan and Natalie won a gold medal at the Winter Olympics for a task they could not complete, I feel like that has to be the epitome of a five hole task. This one was pretty up there, though. I mean, from what I've read and seen, Nick is a pretty big professional soccer player when he was 19, but it's a little hampered by the fact that, you know, unlike Megan and Natalie, he wasn't just kicking balls into goals. It was the whole blindfold thing with Sabrina guiding him, and I think that part of the equation really flustered him. And I think what we're realizing from Nick, which makes him actually more akin to Sabrina than we thought, was he gets very flustered as well. We saw him actually throwing a temper tantrum a couple times this episode, which I did not expect for him in leg 3. I thought like leg 7 maybe, but not so early in the race.
Yeah, well, he's still pretty young. I mean, he's one, because, you know, she's in her early 30s and he's still, you know, 23-ish, I think. And so, but they seem to be the same age. So I think, though, that when you see him do that, you go, oh, yeah, he seems a bit older than he is. But that's true. But it's interesting you bring that up, because though Megan and Natalie did eventually finish the task and not take a penalty, they were there. They took like 40 tries or whatnot. And that, but they weren't skating with like their arm tied behind their back or like, you know, on one skate or some sort of hindrance. The blindfolding thing is another step for him. So it's probably not at that level. Though I wonder if being a professional, it actually being blindfolded, it was harder for him than people that don't play soccer at all.
Yeah, that's true, because he's so used to using his eyes and he's probably accustomed to like a specific pattern that he follows with his head and using his vision, that once that was hampered, he sort of got sent back to square one, which freaks him out a lot more than somebody like Cynthia, who probably hasn't kicked a soccer ball since she was like 10 years old. And so she can very easily, you know, or even someone like Neil and Kristen, who like, okay, let's just associate with the clock, which for all the talk about how brainy Nick and Sabrina are, I feel like a couple more teams really stepped up into those brainy, again, like task breaking roles between Neil and Kristen with the clock. And you have Matt and Nick, who pretty much almost sealed Nick and Sabrina's doom, one could argue. I mean, I would say that when they quit, the 2-hour penalty looked pretty okay, because they're like, oh, these other teams are going to be there forever. But once those guys do the hop and everyone else sees them do the hop, then that's going to close the gap so much more.
Right. Because when they took the penalty, I actually thought, well, they're probably still going to finish like 4th or something. Yeah. I didn't think it. And really, it was within 2-3 minutes or whatnot. And you saw especially that Brian and Cynthia, I think Brian, I'm trying to think if it was Brian or Cynthia, used the hop. And they were the key team, because if they had even taken another few minutes, you know, they would have been eliminated, or, you know, who knows what would have happened. I'm not sure why, how Dana and Amanda did not see the hop, but it was a huge thing. And also very funny. So which to you is the more successful strategy, the clock strategy or the hop? Which do you think is the best way to break this challenge?
Absolutely the hop. Because I think the problem why we see it. First of all, I love that montage of the players just messing up. My favorite is probably Dujon doing this weird, like Scooby-Doo-esque sneak up to the ball when it gets away from him. But that's the main problem, is you're blindfolded. And people were so timid with the ball at first because they were afraid they were going to kick it away from them and lose it. And that cost precious time. So Nick and Matt totally like broke that idea by just saying, well, I'll keep the ball with me at all times. I think the clock idea is really good, but A, it requires precision, and B, there's a good chance that if you kick too hard, the ball is going to get away from you. So keeping the ball guaranteed with you at all times is the way to go from this. But, you know, had Nick and Matt been isolated, if each team had their own goal and nobody was looking at each other, again, there's a chance that they could have done it, maybe told a couple other teams, but it wouldn't have gone to the point where, like, we had six teams in a row basically do the same thing and all leave within each other.
Right. And I will say Dijon, that may have been the funniest thing one of the funniest things I've ever seen, because I don't even know what he was doing. It was like he was doing a little dance and then the ball. I mean, making him be blindfold, just blindfold challenges either lead, generally they seem to be designed so people will end up like running into
hurting themselves.
Things, you know, you have those things that always seem to happen, like, you know, the Big Tom kind of moves, or, you know, whomever, but they also can lead to just ridiculous things in general beyond that, which I don't know. It was a fun challenge, but I agree with you about the hopping, because one thing too, by putting it between your legs, is like when you're doing it originally, you've got your legs, you've got the ball. There's all these, you know, it requires a lot more coordination. And I mean, the fact that Neil and Kristen did that so well, the idea is cool, but there are a lot of teams there that I don't think ever would have been able, like, you know, even Nick and Sabrina, I could see Sabrina yelling 10 and him going, what for? And, you know, turning the wrong way. And it takes a certain level of mentality to make that work.
Yes, and we all know the Italian clock reads exactly the opposite of the Canadian clock.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, and also, did you notice that Sabrina, I noticed especially this time, is really testing the editor's audio skills by dropping out a lot of her words during a lot of...
They're both cursing up a storm. Which hopefully this soccer field wasn't near any like schools or anything like that. But I mean, Sabrina didn't, I would say Sabrina really didn't do her part either, considering that, like, I kind of felt Nick's frustration a little bit, because if I'm just kicking and she goes, okay, left, that opens up a myriad of questions. Like, okay, how far left? To what degree do I go left? You know, left is just a very general word that represents so many different directions.
Right. And I noticed this more on the second viewing, that at first it seemed like he was just not listening, which might have been part of it. But I think she was equally at fault, because when you're blindfolded, you are at the mercy of the person calling, because if you can't trust what they're going to say, if they say left and then you hit a cone, once that happens a few times, then you're so hesitant. And then you saw near the end where they were hitting the time. Because the real trick to this challenge was the 1 minute time limit.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, they would do if everyone like kept the ball with them and didn't hop, but like made very timid movements, everyone would do it. But they'd also be there for like 3 hours kicking the ball.
Right. And that's something that it's easy to miss, because you just kept hearing. I think that's what was hitting most teams, because a lot of teams were just the gong would go off for while they were just standing there.
Yeah.
So I think that's where everyone was trying to be so careful. And you saw teams just having to just at the last second just throw up a kick and eventually would make it. But it's still, I mean, that's a hard 26 tries for, you know, Brennan Sean at the end, and Nick and Sabrina were at 20.
Yeah,
that's a really hard challenge. And I'm curious how long this leg was total.
I'm assuming, I mean, it seemed like they must have landed pretty early in the morning. But I mean, we saw that our last teams running in like late at night. So I'm assuming it was one of those modern amazing race days where it's like go hard for like a 24 hour period.
Right. And the flight was fairly short. I mean, they had to go from basically from one side of South America to the other. but it wasn't one of those things where, you know, but if they landed in the morning, that meant they flew overnight, at least partially, or really early in the morning. So some of those teams had to be just feeling, especially trying to dance the tango by that point.
Yeah. So what did you think of the penalty? Because I would say the penalty is one of the big headlines this season, aside from your winner picks going home. Definitely brings up shades of Robin Amber during the meat block in season 7, I would say.
Yeah, and that was the interesting thing, where it was 4 hours, but the task took so long that it almost felt like it was, well, once someone else did it, it was really smart. I assume the penalties are always interesting because in the very early seasons, you felt like you got these 24-hour penalties or these crazy. They were really trying to make it where teams would never quit. Like, it was so strong. But, and we saw this a bit in season, I mean, last season, where you had a 2-hour penalty for a task, and granted, it didn't matter because of an injury. But it doesn't, I mean, it's weird because I assume it has to do with the fact that being a route info as opposed to a roadblock or a detour. And the roadblock, I think, is 4 hours usually. But 2 is, I mean, it seems like it's hard to say if that's fair or not. I assume that's how all the route infos are. But
well, it depends, though. From what I could read, I think it ranges anywhere from like 30 minutes to 2 hours. I mean, I'm assuming they assess the full 2 hours because it was a task. You know, it's not just like, oh, I'll take a taxi instead of walking, which I think is like the 30 minute penalty. That's when they do the weird nebulous thing of like, well, we'll assess you the time that it would have taken had you walked instead of taking a taxi. But yeah, this it differs for me between like this again. This is more Robin Amber than it is like Rex and Bob to me, because I feel like Rex and Bob, it wasn't let's quit the task so we can have a strategic advantage to keep going. Rex and Bob, it seemed more like let's quit the task because I'm frustrated with it and I don't want to do it anymore. Nick and Sabrina was much more like let's take advantage of the position we're in right now. And once they saw Neil and Kristen get it, they're like, let's just quit. And again, I still believe that had Nick and Matt not broken this task, they still would have done pretty well. They almost got like the Heather and Eve treatment, where they started in first and fell all the way down to the bottom. It's pretty ridiculous that almost all those teams checked in within 2 hours of each other. And even when Nick and Sabrina checked in, Brian and Cynthia and Dana Amanda were right there.
Right. And I get what you're saying now about the Robin Amber connection, because basically it's a rare case, because most of the time, not always, but most of the time when you take a penalty, it's just out of I'm never going to do this. And I think Rex and Bob, they took 2 in a row, thought they were getting eliminated. They were just like, we give up, and had no idea that they were going to survive, you know, when it happened. And in this case, here's the weird thing with Nick and Sabrina. So they check in and he says they're first. And she looks shocked, like she's mad, like she's so nervous because they could have finished first. And my thought is she should be thrilled.
Yeah,
because it was a very weird moment where maybe it was just like because they weren't surprised by the penalty. But she had this look on her face like, oh, my gosh, we could have got first. And where my thought was, you know, because they were not, I mean, they showed up, you know, they were at the detour, the dying detour. So they didn't know where if other people could have gone to the other detour. They had a very strange reaction at that point. I didn't really get it.
Yeah, I think it was for them, the full repercussions of what they did finally caught up to them. I think they felt it was just sort of a survival tactic for them to quit because they thought, oh, we just need to just stay in the game. But when they realized, like, I agree with you, like they probably falsely thought they had we had a shot at the top then, but you wouldn't have if you stayed there kicking the ball. You might have eventually, you know, you might have seen the hop, and I don't know if Nick, professional soccer player, could bring himself to do the hop, but you could have ended up in the middle of the pack, and there's a good chance you probably wouldn't have finished first, because Neil and Kristen, even though they floundered on the tango task, were able to sort of just by pure, you know, try again, they were able to win the leg. And I don't know, even though Nick and Sabrina crushed that other detour task, had they been in a not so good position from the soccer task, I don't think they would have been able to finish near the top.
Yeah, no, I think the penalty was, you know, it seems weird because they dropped so far and almost got eliminated. But in their particular case, it might have been the right move. I mean, it's just a question of, but then you run into that whole thing where you say, well, in 2 hours, could they have done the task? Probably.
Once the hopping was figured out, then they could have. If it wasn't, I don't know. But I also don't know how those other teams would have done it either, the less athletic teams.
Right. And, you know, because you saw, I mean, athleticism wasn't the only thing, because, you know, Dana and Amanda are pretty strong and they couldn't do it. And granted, I think, again, that was a communications issue, but it was a hard task. And back to, you mentioned about how close the teams were. I think, I mean, they lucked out. They have this pit stop with the bridge, and I know they probably designed that hoping teams would be running or whatever. But to get the camera shot, first when Nick and Sabrina check in, you can see Brian and Cynthia behind them. And then Brian and Cynthia check in, and you can see Dana and Amanda behind them. Because it's so, they so often use the editing where they set it up to be, like, in the U.S. version, I feel like it's even more blatant. And again, I feel like I'm just dumping on the U.S. version, which I love the U.S. version, but it gets really blatant where, you know, the teams aren't very close, and they keep showing them pointing and they show them talking. This was this rare case where it was, I mean, I don't know if I could time it, but it was like 2 minutes between each of them. Yeah, and that's crazy.
That is crazy. And I will say one thing this leg has going for it, in spite of maybe the not so good designs, is that, and this season in general, is that there is so much place swapping, which was awesome. And I love it, because it really, that's the thing I love about this race, is that it's so unpredictable. Someone like Simeon Ope, I thought they were dead in the water from the time they landed and they couldn't get a taxi. But to have them not only come, they came dead last into like the second to last task, and then they end up finishing in like fifth place. I think that that just speaks to like how weirdly varied this cast is, and how like there really isn't, as much as I love Megan and Natalie, there really isn't a team so far that like crushes every single task they do, which is good. It leads to a more balanced competition.
Right. And even Gino and Jesse did finish second, but the teams were so packed up, I bet you they were only not that far. A lot of these teams were not that far apart. So you can't say, I mean, they were hanging out at the embassy with Simeon Ope and looking like they could be in trouble, because so, and they seem to be very lost in other countries, even though they finished second. I think it has, I mean, they outran Nick and Matt, but they, you know, they were not that far from being seventh or something.
Yeah, they're reminding me a little bit of like the Tyler and James, the former Addict models from season 10 of the US version, like that they're alpha males on paper, but they just can't navigate well. Or in Gino and Jesse's case, I think they just have a lot of bad taxi luck. At least they did this leg. So they have, I mean, they had that chink in their armor. We'll see if that ends up being utilized, or whether they're going to make it to the final three. And that will be part of John's montage of like, Gino and Jesse did well, and then they struggled for a couple of legs, but then they finished first for the other seven legs of the race.
I hope it's not that way. And there's nothing I particularly dislike about them. I mean, they make some comments here and there that are a little like bro-y to me, but they seem like nice enough guys. But I prefer not having any. I mean, I thought it was interesting with Megan and Natalie, partially because it was two females and how dominant they were and how they were the alpha team. I mean, they're one of the most alpha teams I've ever seen on the race. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it must be something with hockey players, I guess. But I wouldn't be as excited to see Gino and Jesse do the same thing. I don't think it's going to happen, though, because you've seen we've had three different first place winners, Neil and Kristen and Hamilton and Michaela. You know, neither, both of them, you wouldn't say you would expect would be the strongest team. You know, we've had other team, Nick and Sabrina, at times looked very good and looked very bad, you know, and then there's some other teams like even Brian and Cynthia were near the top last week. I still don't think they're going to win the race, but they have certain things they are good at and others they're not. And that's one thing where I think Canada has, I mean, it might be, some of it might just be the chance or that the way they cast. But so far, especially in all three legs this season, it's so unpredictable, and things you think teams are out at the 20-minute mark and they finish third. I mean, it's really exciting to watch, even if, you know what, well, the detour was a little goofy this week.
Yeah, the only team looking at the leg positions thus far, the only team that's really finished consistently like in the top half are the wrestlers, Nick and Matt, which I feel like a lot of people have like, if they feel like we've been sleeping on them, they've sort of, everyone's sort of been waking up to them, and they're thinking like, oh, is this another version of Mickey and Pete? I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
In terms of Nick and Matt?
Yeah, in terms of like, are they another like sleeper male team, sort of goofy guys that are remaining to like the middle / mid top of the pack that are just going to last so long into the race that they become an actual threat to win?
It's possible. I mean, at front, they seem like one of those teams that, you know, is strong enough and would, you know, that they're not going to go out early and they have the right attitude. And just, we did get this question from John Johnston about if they are Mickey and Pete 2.0. And right now, I think they seem a little stronger than I didn't give Mickey and Pete as much credit in the first few legs as being a team. I thought they were kind of the goofballs. And then they just slowly kind of moved up and moved up and moved up. Nick and Matt to me seem pretty solid so far. I mean, they were second up until they got outrun at the end. But that does show something that might come into play if there's a really, because they're strong, but, you know, they may not be as quick in certain ways. So I can see it. I can see it. I know that was kind of a roundabout way to get to the answer. I can see it, though. I don't think they're going to sneak up on people like Mickey and Pete did.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I do not think they have the underestimated personalities that Mickey and Pete did. I think definitely last season, even the people they were competing with were like, well, they're just dude bros that we, you know, they don't share a brain cell between them, so we can kind of write them off. But Nick and Matt are like, they seem like good guys. They're also wrestlers too. So even though they are very strong, I think they're, since wrestling is, spoiler alert for those of you that, you know, haven't been around since like 1997, wrestling is fake. It's a performance. I'm sorry to burst your bubble here, Dan, but I feel like in putting that on, you definitely have a certain, you have your wits about you, considering that you're putting yourself through so much physical stuff every night, and it really is a performance. And that even shows with their camera performance as well. They haven't been shown too much, but I really enjoy the stuff that they do when they're being shown their definite goofballs, but they definitely have their wits about them. I mean, let's look at, you know, doing the hop was totally a page out of Nick and Sabrina's book. So I feel like if we tout Nick and Sabrina for the braininess they have on the race, I feel like we have to start talking about Nick and Matt as well.
Yeah. And I think that's an underrated part of it, because, and I think they probably will. They kind of laughed at what they did, but it was really smart. And I doubt the people that designed the challenge expected people to do that. So right there, they broke it in that way. And, you know, the tango was funny and they looked kind of goofy, but they did pretty well at it. And that kind of speaks to them being, even though they're big dudes, being agile enough where, I mean, they didn't look, I mean, it didn't even take them as many tries as Neil and Kristen, who finished before them, but got there fairly far before them. So they looked, I mean, they didn't struggle that much with it.
Yeah. I think, again, this might be a team that people are sleeping on, though. I do wonder if, is there a Mickey and Pete effect? As you guys talked about, I don't know how many teams actually watch The Amazing Race Canada, but are there teams out there that are like, we need to look out for these two guys? Not only are they big, but they might have this Mickey and Pete thing where they're totally nice guys, but they have the potential to sort of stick around and not get eliminated until the end of the race when they become a real threat to win.
It's possible, though. I think if we run into a U-turn situation, the ones that are going to jump out are still going to be Gino and Jesse, because they, regardless of where they've placed or how smart they are, they look like the type of like strong guys that always have the target on them. But let's say we run into a situation where they're gone or they're ahead and they're the ones U-turning or whatnot. I can see Nick and Matt getting considered for a U-turn. Now, will that be, I mean, because there were a few teams like Brent and Sean who seemed like they were more fans from the interviews up front, and they've done okay. So a team like that, I can see really thinking through it and going, is this going to be a team that we need to, that doesn't slide through? There are still so many teams right now, though, that, I mean, we're starting with 12. I mean, we're at 9, and I expect at some point soon we're going to see a non-elimination leg. So there's still a lot left for teams to start thinking that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, since this may be a longer race, I know it's 12 legs, but again, like you said, it's through 12 teams, so they might just eliminate a non-elimination leg. But I mean, who knows how many U-turns we're going to see? Are we going to see the fast forward at some point? So there are so many different factors still left in this game. But I'm assuming, you know, you spend so much time out there worrying about the race, but there has to be a certain amount of time that's devoted to like sizing up the competition as well. So I'm really intrigued. We talked about it with Hamilton and Michaela before. I'm really intrigued to see if there's a U-turn in the next couple legs. What's going to happen? Is it going to be a just sort of out in the open, like, okay, well, U-turn people who are behind us, or will, like what we see in these most recent Amazing Race US seasons, will a coalition of teams form to say, let's get this team out?
Yeah, and if that happens, I assume it would be Gino and Jesse, but let's say Nick and Matt finish first next week, and then leg five has, you never know, or Nick and Sabrina or whomever. If some, you know, you almost, if let's say the U-turn is in leg five, you almost don't want to be the team that finishes first next week, because it's somehow going, teams may look, especially if it's by a lot, you know, but we'll see. There's no guarantee it's going to be in like five or where they would even put it. So they could flip things around. So we've teased it for a while. So let's talk about the detour. So the two options, you know, we had dance or dine. Dance wasn't, you know, the second dance challenge we had. Dine was, seemed to be, it was a memorization and pronunciation thing where you had to, I mean, you had to understand what they were saying and relay it to your partner. This all feels a little familiar.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dan, are you sure you're not reading the notes for week two?
Oh, I was. No, actually, the dancing was not nearly as funny this week, so that it won't cover it.
No, but, the Argentinians are very serious about their dance.
It's all about, this is all about the love this week. You know, that John stretched a little bit and said the dine has to do with how you can win someone's heart. Might be a bit of a stretch, especially because those diners looked very angry.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be completely honest here, not to disparage Argentinian food, but if I looked at that stuff, and I'm a very, you know, open eater, I'll pretty much eat anything. But if I saw that food come to me, I don't know if I would. I don't know how much I would tip that waiter, considering the quality of that food that came to me on that plate.
Well, and plus they had to receive it like five times.
And it was so, probably cold.
Yeah, I don't think they were really ready to dig in. By the end, they were like, please stop asking us to reset.
It's also probably like 2 a.m. at that point. So like, we thought we were signing up for like 8 hours. Can we just like go home now?
Yeah. So I'm of two minds here on this, because I know that you hinted, I mean, you know, that it does seem kind of familiar. And in the past, even last season, the Amazing Race Canada really loves the memorization challenges. And it's different than US. They may read a poem, but it always seems like the Canadian versions, they're harder. Like they have, sometimes I think I'm sitting at home and I don't think I could memorize this. But there is, I like having hard challenges. I like seeing teams have to try the tango. I like all of these things. But having them back to back, is that a deal breaker for you?
I just think it's, I don't want to call it laziness, because I do think the Canadian producers are still trying to make these tasks and these locations inherent to Canada, which I love. I mean, let's remember last season when they obviously went to France, and I think they went to go visit like a Canadian memorial there or something. This episode, there was that really oddly placed like totem pole that's carved from right. Canadian cedar wood, which was cool to like visit and say like, oh, this symbolizes some sort of weird connection between the two countries. But it is weird to me that the producers didn't just look at the previous leg and they're like, oh, these are the exact same types of tasks. And then you add on to that this whole idea of, oh, only six people can do a detour option at a time. And that sort of kind of brings it down for me some more.
So yeah, that's a good question, because we did receive that question from a listener, from Jeffrey K, who said, what do you think about forcing the teams to do each detour, or half the teams to do each detour? So I'm getting the impression that's not something you like.
I think it's just tough because I'm an Amazing Race purist. That's not the definition of a detour. As you know, I'm not going to believe John's word here when he says it's their choice, because it's really not their choice. If, as we saw with some of these teams in the back, there's six teams already doing it. And I can understand there's production limitations, but the first time I really saw this show up, which I know it's probably shown up before, but the first time I remember seeing it was in Amazing Race 24. I think there was like a detour, and one of them was a really easy one of like having an elephant lift logs, but only three teams could do that, and the other teams had to do like this much harder task. So I don't know. I know it would suck to have an option where, you know, basically nobody goes for it, But I still believe in, like, let's leave the opportunity open to teams to do it however they, to do whatever task they want to. So to have them sort of handcuffed to say, okay, only six teams can do this total, is not great in my opinion.
Yeah, and that is a good point. And we saw that again in Amazing Race 25 with the painting challenge, where teams were up like the Sistine Chapel type thing, where they were squeezed in. And it was a similar thing. And I think, I mean, it does seem like with these two detours, like in that case, it may have been they just didn't have all the stations, but I'm sure they probably could have set it up. But in these two, like the dancing, there was plenty of space. And then the dining, there were plenty of tables. So it does feel like it was set up, one, because they wanted to make sure teams did both detours. But two, I think it was set up so teams would go to the wrong one and have to go back, or go to the full one, which is what happened. Because you would think teams are more likely to go to one. Just the name dance, teams are more likely to do, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you want to balance out the choices more, pull an Amazing Race 25. Just put options called this or that, and don't put descriptions behind them. And then you're basically, if the probabilities all check out, basically you're guaranteed 50% of your teams will go for one option above the other. Granted, there's a chance they may switch, sort of like what happened in 25 when they're like, oh no, hell no, I'm not going to walk on that grease pole. Let me just go polish this armor. But I mean, then you'll be able to sort of divide your resources more evenly.
Right. And that's a case where they did that, one, because the walking was impossible. But but yeah, I see what you're saying, because here they describe them. They have kind of a basic description. You know what it is, and you're not really. Yeah, it does. It seems a little manipulative, but, you know, I think it's also just to add another layer. But we saw, I mean, two teams, and it partially had to do with Dana and Amanda getting eliminated, but really they got eliminated at the end because they didn't do as well at the dying challenge. But either way, it did play at least a partial role in what happened.
Well, I will clarify and say, I think it's because they didn't do, not only did they not do so well at the dying challenge, but I think it was mostly because they fruitlessly went after the dance challenge, then got turned away and had to go back. Because I think you saw someone like Brent and Sean who went for the dine almost immediately. They ended up in sixth place. So I think the teams that just went to one task and left benefited much more, which is why we saw Neil and Kristen, you know, they were struggling so much with that dance, but they said, A, let's keep going with it. B, we're already here. We're going to lose a spot, one of six coveted spots, if we switch over to the other detour. So let's just keep at it. Like, once that's factored into the equation, there's going to be much different behaviors involved with it.
Right. And that did play a role in their thinking. So it's another way that limiting it did have an impact on what happened, because you're right. If they had gone to dine and said it stunk and gone back, you know, without the limits, they might've felt like they could do that, you know, but with the limit, yeah, it was a no-brainer, and it was the right move for them, but they didn't know that at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And gone are the days of Ken and Gerard doing what, you know, Television Without Petty referred to as the double bald snark, where they switched from one detour task to another, then switched back.
Yes, the abort.
When they had to, like, calculate, I don't know if they had to calculate the money in the Geneva safe, or if they had to, like, find the code to the safe, but it was something like that they gave up on.
Yeah, they gave up on counting the giant piles of money to go count how many trees were out there or something much easier. But yeah, they've tried different things. Like you mentioned, the this or that. I think there was a stretch. There's been stretches of time where they set up detours. And this is also one of the reasons in the U.S. why I think they got rid of the every leg fast forward, is because it cost them money to set up these tasks.
Yeah.
And while I love the fast forward in every leg, and I still wish it was there, it's one of those situations where I'd rather see the show still be on the air. We're here, though. I mean, it's not exactly the same because the show is so popular, but I think for the dramatic purposes, they still want to have teams do everything.
Yeah, that makes sense. And they want to showcase their tasks as well, because even though they're still pretty solid. I mean, I think The Amazing Race Canada is still one of the most watched shows in Canada in general. They go crazy over it. They still want to appeal to their producers and say, like, look at all the culture these teams are exploring. So to have them say, like, well, I saw most of them just dance and none of them actually, you know, experienced the cuisine. They'll say, oh, no, look, see, only six teams had to do the dance. Everyone else had to serve this cult food to all the extras.
Yeah, and that is something I enjoyed in both the leg in Chile and in Argentina, is that they do seem to be trying to have them do different things having to do with the culture. I mean, granted, we can talk a little bit now about the roadblock, which here's the big question, after you watch this, immediately go out and buy a lot of Mentos?
I feel like I was subliminally told to, or at least I haven't seen the Mentos that have the letters on them in a long time. I don't know if they're behind the production schedule of Mentos in Canada, but I'm pretty sure that was like a thing that happened like a few years ago and hasn't been seen since.
Well, maybe that those Mentos have just found their way to Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Yeah, that's but yeah. Do you so you pronounce it that way too? Because I noticed John Montgomery pronounces it like that, and that's so like, I don't know. That's so like North American to be like, we're going to Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Oh, now I feel like such a I am in Missouri, so we're not as refined here to pronounce things. But I was just following the great John Montgomery here.
Yeah, so. Well, I also am a big fan of the musical Evita, so that's why I always say Buenos Aires.
So speaking of that, I think everyone did know the Eva Perón answer. How dumb should teams feel? I mean, again, not everyone is, as involved with what's going on with the Pope or anything, but not knowing Pope Francis.
I mean, Hamilton and Michaela, I don't want to necessarily give them an excuse, but I mean, they are very young. I feel like papal politics does not,
not fascinating.
Yeah. And also let's look at people like Dujon and Leilani, who are dancers that are probably not following whether the black smoke or the white smoke is coming out of Vatican City anytime soon. But I do have to kind of agree with Sabrina here, like, read a book.
I wanted to be like, read an article, because, he's all over the news. So, but I did find that funny, though, the team's trying to, that I think that was where we had the English yeah. moment there for Dana, where they were very excited to get all of their answers pretty much. But what do you think? Do you like that task overall? Or?
I mean, I definitely, in terms of Mentos tasks, it obviously ranks below the great Pierre and Michelle meltdown of the paint by numbers with the Mentos. I still thought it was a fun task. I thought it was really fun. Nick and Sabrina were pretty golden the first half of this episode, and I'm like, wow, they're actually crushing it. Sabrina hasn't had any sort of freak out or meltdown, and then we get to this task and she's still doing well until she freaks out over three D's missing, and she's just like, it's not like a calm thing of like, oh, where are these three D's? She's like, oh my God, I can't find these. Oh God, I'm ruined. This is it. They're all coming in. I'm done for. I'm eliminated. I'm going to go home. Oh, where are the D's? Oh, I just flipped these P's upside down. So it was a lot of fun to watch. At least it had a lot of moments. I mean, we talked before about the Dana private eye moment for this poor lady's shop. Nick had some great moments here with like just eating the Mentos while Dana was running around. Sabrina, as I talked about before, had some great stuff too. So this was a fun task overall. It reminded me also of like Amazing Race 2. I remember there was a roadblock where the person had to like basically go on a scavenger hunt from a bunch of different Australian, they were asked a bunch of different Australian questions. And they had to like find the answers in a square somewhere. This sort of reminded me of that, of like, they had to go around and ask like, who's the most famous soccer player and who's the king of tango, which I thought was, as you talked about before, a fun way to connect back to the culture.
Yeah. And I was pretty good. I knew the first three, but I admit I did not know who the king of tango was. So I would have also had to ask someone who the king of tango was.
Yeah, and I mean, anyone who listens to me on my podcasting knows I'm definitely not a person of sport. So I had no idea who the football player was either.
Well, the thing is, if you had said just like randomly, where is Diego Maradona from? I would have been like, but when they said a soccer player, that was the first thing that came to mind. So I guess, I knew he was South American, but I'm not sure I would have known for sure he was from Argentina. But again, he's not somebody who played soccer this year. So again, somebody younger wouldn't know that either, even if they were familiar with it.
I would have just put Pele and then fill out the rest of the spaces with E's.
You're like, oh man, I guess Pele's got more L's and E's than I thought.
I guess I haven't really spelled his name out phonetically.
So you don't think, though, I mean, the Mentos had letters, but was this just a bunch of packs of Mentos that had a bunch of letters, or were they strategically given so many letters as to only have enough for the words?
Yeah, I don't know how much the Amazing Race works with the Mentos factory to say, like, okay, these are the number of letters that need to be each one. Because I guess, yeah, there wasn't usually a problem where people ran out of certain letters. Though I'm assuming there was probably, looking behind the curtain at production, there was probably some sort of production hand standing off camera with like a set of letters in case people needed them.
Yeah, because I saw when Brent dropped all those and I thought, oh man, I hope that's not the letters he needs. Not thinking, you know, it probably, because obviously right after that there was, I mean, they had the little thing with the O versus the A, but it wasn't really a big deal. So it was more with Sabrina when she couldn't find them. I had this thought like, man, they're really making this hard. They're only giving them certain letters. But I think that was more Sabrina than the actual test.
Well, considering that Nick was eating the Mentos they picked up, I think they were pretty good in terms of letters.
They wouldn't have a case where they had to take a penalty because he ate all the Mentos.
We're missing half a word. We had to quit the roadblock now because you ate all the Mentos.
That's a 4-hour penalty. It's like, oh, why did I?
Well,
it
looks like you need a Mentos to get out of this situation.
Yeah, in terms of product placement, I mean, I don't mind it. I mean, every week we have the BMO needs to help and the card again this week.
Yeah.
And I mean, there have been cases on the US version with the Fords and the closing the trunks and that are just terrible. With this was not on that level. I felt like it was still on its own a good task, so it didn't, and similar to the one you mentioned from last season, it didn't really bother me at all.
Yeah, and it's not as bad as for me like an Unfinished Business when they had that task of like drinking the Snapple and that's like, what, remember what did the Snapple taste like, which led to like Luke meltdown number 352. So I would say like it's shoehorned in, yes, but I mean, that's reality TV nowadays.
Yes,
it's better at least than the Big Brother 3 veto competition with like the KFC $5 box.
I don't know what you mean. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
There's basically like a matching game where they're like, okay, you have to find your biscuit for your KFC $5 box. Like I think it was much more egregious than the Mentos. And the Mentos were granted like a task, but this challenge took like 10 minutes on Big Brother 3.
Well, I will move on. I also want to mention, I couldn't figure out how to, I was going to shoehorn this into the intro. One of my favorite moments from the episode, we haven't really talked about Brian and Cynthia at all, except for where they finished. But when they arrive, you know, you had a little bit with Cynthia with, you know, just kind of taking on the weird accent because she's in a different country. But the Argentina, yeah. Argentina.
Even their chanting is the most dry thing ever. And I love it.
She's so dry with everything. She's like, rapido, arriba. I don't know. I hate my winner pick being gone, but I see more comedy possibly coming from them.
I love the pairing of her and Neil during the roadblock. I'm like, come on, run, Forrest, run. I love the fact that this old ex football player being basically bullied by this female cop.
But said in such a like not emotive way, just like, run, Forrest, run. It's just, you know, but maybe that approach isn't so bad. I know they almost got eliminated, but they're kind of, with the exception of his dancing last week, they're kind of low-key play. Yeah. If they avoid mistakes, could keep them around a while. Now, it seems like that isn't true because they've been near the back 2 out of 3 legs, but they're still here, so you never know.
Well, I think they were in the back the first time, mainly because Cynthia was not too physical on that whole obstacle course. But I mean, this time it makes sense looking on paper because the tango is really the dance of passion and love. And I feel like Brian and Cynthia, while they love each other, probably do not represent the biggest sense of passion on the Amazing Race Canada.
Nothing on the level of Gino and Jesse doing the dance.
No, which I always feel like, as much as people like laugh, it's like, oh, two guys dancing together. I've never really heard of a case where like the two guys dancing with each other like resulted in a catastrophe. You know, I feel like it was a much more awkward case with Neil and Kristen dancing with each other than Gino and Jesse or Nick and Matt.
Yeah, and I really appreciate we did not get too much of the like kind of weird ho two guys whatever. I mean, they both kind of like, oh, okay, and then did it. Where you always wonder if it's going to be into that cringeworthy kind of let's make a lot of jokes about this
like,
kind of thing,
like Tyler in Amazing Race 26 with the whole lady boy thing.
Oh yes, where you're kind of like, oh, it was might have been funny for 10 seconds and then not so much.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, the father-daughter thing, that's right, because they're doing, you know, doing that. And granted, it's not like she's 18 or something, but still, I imagine that wasn't, I mean, it's not the most uncomfortable challenge we've seen on the Amazing Race Canada, but I'm sure that, you know, they handled it like champs, but it might not have been, you know, the best situation for the passionate dancing.
Yeah, we have yet to see, I mean, we'll bite our tongues until we see the return of the paint. Get painted naked challenge.
Which I don't know. I mean, we'll see if that is that going to be the switchback for later this season.
Yes, like let's be as awkward as Suki and Ginger were.
I'm not sure that's possible.
No,
though,
Suki and Ginger definitely set the bar extremely high with that test. I feel like there's no way to clear that.
Very, very true. So I wanted to ask you now. So we're three legs in. We've seen enough of these teams a little bit now. I won't ask you to rank teams 1 to 9. That would be cruel. But if you were going to put power rankings, who are your top, let's say top three teams, not who you think for sure is going to win, but who are your top three right now in terms of how they're looking?
So I feel like I talked up Nick and Matt enough that I have to put them up there. So they definitely be number one. It's, and like we said before, it's tough because a lot of these other teams have had a lot of variants to them. I mean, Gino and Jesse are good. It's just they've been having the worst luck with transportation, but maybe that's going to improve once they get back to the home country. So maybe I'll throw them in there as well. Let's look at some other
teams. It's really tough to come. I mean, I think I know who I'd pick third or with them, but you look at the other teams and they all kind of have been up and down.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say... See, Nick and Sabrina are like, they have such great skills, but I mean, we're going to see them come back to the mainland next episode when basically they spent two episodes in a country that they had such a huge advantage with the terms of the language barrier. So now that they're like, they don't have that advantage to them, we'll see how well they do and whether they're going to, you know, come to pieces after that, basically almost getting eliminated. I will, you know what? I'm debating between Brian and Cynthia or Neil and Kristen, actually, because none of the other teams, unfortunately, have Hamilton and Makila have kind of shown their game prowess, but they also have kind of been meh otherwise. Mm-hmm. So give me Neil and Kristen. They've been on the, you know, they were very near the back of the pack when he bungled that first roadblock, the first leg, but they're on the rise. They'll obviously fall next leg because they're probably in first place, and it's very unlikely that they'll come in first place two legs in a row, but I think they've got their wits about them, and it seems like Kristen has a big head for the social game as well.
Yeah, that's who I would have picked, because I kind of had the similar thing where I looked and went, well, I don't know who else, but I mean, I think a team like Dejan Lalani has potential, but they also benefited by having the dance challenge again.
Yeah.
So they've sort of, you know, they've benefited, especially this week, even more than last week, because last week's dance was kind of goofy. But I think Neil and Kristen's attitude with this many teams left, I mean, that first leg, he ran into something that, and you can always run into something that kills you. But I think they're looking like they're probably, I would expect they'll be at least in the top five or six.
I would hope so. And I mean, it stems from a long line of these father-daughter teams doing well. I mean, I'm thinking Gary and Mallory kind of finished in the same position as well. And I mean, Ron and Christina is probably one of the most well-known father-daughter teams too. So I think, I have a feeling they'll do pretty well. Dujon and Leilani are interesting because I think they were really painted to be the arguing couple. And even in this episode, he's like, you know, when we get tense with each other, we just calm down and dance. But I'm like, we have seen you argue for maybe 2 minutes of television thus far in the three episodes we've seen. And so they're really, I don't know, maybe they fizzled out what producers were expecting them to be, but they really have not been delivering in terms of the drama they promised.
No, we saw a little bit of it last week with, you know, the walk faster. No, I won't walk faster. But in general, we haven't really seen it. I mean, we didn't see much of them. I mean, beyond him having this funny run and then them killing the dance challenge, they weren't. I mean, I guess this kind of happens where teams that finish in the middle, we don't see that much of. So we'll see where they go from here. They seem to be a solid team, which solid might be good enough for a while. If you get a team, if Nick and Sabrina have a blow up, because that's a good point you brought up. And I was about Sabrina, because this is one of those kind of things where it's not just that her family's from here. The language, she doesn't even just know Spanish. She knows Argentinian Spanish. She mentioned if they owned, and then they barely are survived because of one challenge.
Yeah,
it's not going to be the same. You know, I don't know how long. I know that they're going to go overseas again, but I assume they're going to spend a few episodes probably in Canada, where that'll change things completely for them. And they won't be margin for error, and they won't be able to bail themselves out by killing the last 2 weeks by killing the challenge that other people struggled with.
Yeah, chances are they're not going to go back to a Spanish-speaking country. So I can only imagine if they make it to, like, I'm assuming they'll go to, like, at least one Asian country, just because that tends to breed a lot of drama in terms of a language barrier. So I'm fully expecting, if they make it that far, to see Sabrina have a complete freak out when her taxi driver doesn't understand her when they're in, I don't know, Shanghai.
Well, I mean, they have announced officially, I mean, on news where they're going, but I'm not going to say it just because some people don't read the CTV news. But it is a place, judging by previous seasons of the U.S. version, where it just seems designed for Sabrina to freak out. So
amazing, because I mean, she is, I don't know what it is about Sabrina's on Canadian television, but she really is fantastic TV. And Nick again in this episode has kind of grown into his own as his own source of great TV.
Yeah, he seems like he's not Zach of the Zach and Flo here. He seems to be more, you know, in the similar zone, and they've both shown skills and they've both shown craziness, which is why we're seeing so much of them on our TV.
Yeah, he's closer to Blair than he is to Zach at this point.
Yeah, we're very calm, but then can screw up just as much.
Yeah, and freak out at his partner about it.
All right, so do you have a winner pick for this season? Because mine is already gone. So I mean, I could make another one, but I think I'm gonna hold off on that. Do you have you picked one when the season started?
I picked I kind of was backing Dana and Amanda as well, but now that they're gone, my secondary pick, which you've heard me back them a lot tonight, I'm going with Nick and Matt.
I think that's a solid pick. So you know, I'm not going to take a second chance approach, but if I did, they would definitely be a potential candidate.
I think the listeners of Rob Has a Podcast should vote on what your second chance pick should be.
We're going to get just so many votes. I don't know. It's going to be tough. I think the winners, of course, would not be a lot of these teams.
You would absolutely get Nick and Sabrina just so people control you.
Right. Is there anything else? I think we're good. I think we've covered all the big points that I had marked down. Is there anything else you wanted to cover from this week's Amazing Race Canada?
No, I mean, like we talked about before, Dujon and Leilani, Simi and Opie, even like Brent and Sean, who are usually have been like the quippy gay guys, which has kind of become an unfortunate archetype for this show. They were very invisible this episode. So I'm intrigued to see, if we see a spike in their airtime the next few episodes, does that mean they're going to be in trouble?
Yeah. And I did enjoy Brent and Sean, you know, I think it was Brent reciting all the foods over and over again as his way to use, which worked very well. But I agree. I think with this many teams, especially, and when you add that extra task, which I love having multiple more tasks, but if, you know, it ends up being a lot about the tasks. So sometimes if teams are doing okay, or, you know, we saw a bit of them when they were struggling with the soccer, but there's going to be a few teams that are going to kind of run the show as far as airtime.
Yeah, which, again, is a little sad personally, because, again, I think one of the things the past two seasons had really going well for it is that it edited the team, so we got to know a lot of them. And considering I listed off those three teams that, even though, again, Brent and Sean have had their quips, I really know nothing about them. So I'm just hoping to see more of them. You know, they got cast for a reason because they're good TV, and I want to see them bring more to the race.
I think we will. I still really like this cast, and there's just a lot of teams that I'm rooting for. And there aren't really a lot of teams there really aren't any that I'm just hoping do poorly, which, you know, that's always fun. I mean, the trick is making it so they're likable and interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, I think these teams are all likable. There's no one that I outwardly hate at this moment. There's nobody that's playing the villain. I just want them to all be, you know, entertaining.
Right, right. Well, okay, I want to give a little bit of info here. I am going to be writing a blog with Jess out that it may be up when this airs, but it'll be coming up over the weekend following the episode. And Mike is going to be rejoining me next week for episode number 4 because our superstar host will still be traveling out of the country. And I know the Amazing Race Canada is not always that easy to locate, but there are ways to find it. One way is sometimes they're shown on YouTube, and there's a good resource if you become a patron of Rob as a Podcast over at patreon.com/RHAP. You often can find where other patrons have posted links that you could watch. And you can talk to amazing people that love The Amazing Race and Survivor and Big Brother and other shows. And there are other ways through CTV, but that are more complicated, but doable. I hope you're able to find a place to watch the show. I assume you are, since you are listening to this podcast.
Yeah, but none of that. Watching on CTV will not be nearly as fun as going into the patron group and talking to actual people about it.
Definitely. I am a patron, and Rob gets in there a lot, and lots of, and Jessica, and a lot of other great people.
Yeah.
And Mike, I want to thank you for subbing in here. I think you did an amazing job, and I'm looking forward to talking again next week.
Of course. I thank you for having me. This was a really fun time. By the way, doing a little plug here, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at a Mike Bloom type. So let me know what you think of this episode. You can find me, I'm doing a lot actually this week on the Rob Has a Podcast and all of its networks. Actually, right before we recorded this, I just did a podcast with Rob covering the 2-hour premiere of Last Comic Standing. That was a lot of fun. And you can also catch what we did last week. We got together to talk through the We are forming the perfect season of Survivor, picking the best episode sequentially, and we have worked through our way through the pre-merge, and that was a great time as well. And you can find me over on post-show recaps as well. Right now, I am recapping the Fox TV show Wayward Pines, which just ended, so I'll be doing a finale podcast with AJ Mass sometimes this weekend, but I'm always doing stuff here and there on post-show recaps as well. So if you throw a rock and the Rob Has a Planet atmosphere, you will most likely hit something that I'm doing.
Wow, that is impressive. I am bringing on the superstar podcasters here on our podcast. I am at Twitter at PT Snob, and we love to answer your questions here. So if you send Mike and or I questions next week after the show airs, we will try to address them on the podcast. And it was another good episode, and we're looking forward to the season. And thanks a lot for listening.